This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's a beautiful day to be alive. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new channel Q on the radio and radio.com. Happy Thursday. We're almost at the end, folks. We can do it together.
You're so motivational.
I'm trying to be.
It's beautiful.
I mean, this world is a crazy place as we see.
Honestly, I am throwing this entire weekend day away. So, hi.
You and everyone else. And I think at this point, it's the first time I've seen Andy Cohen not want to be on social media.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of that, and we're gonna be getting into that and more in afternoon tea. So,
yes.
Because there's some celebrities out there that are keeping very quiet, but, you know, Andy Cohen is not one of them.
Yes. And, of course, this morning, and we're going to be getting into what's trending in the news in just a moment, all about the Jussie Smollett case.
Yeah.
But I went to go to the gym for the first time in a few weeks. And, of course, right away, this is the reason why I can't do things like that, because there's always breaking news.
Wait, you went to the gym the first time in a few weeks? I thought you were just there.
Yeah, this morning. So I was listening to the news conference. I was listening to the Morning Beat with Michaela and Jay, and it was crazy to listen to that. I couldn't stop listening to this news conference because it felt unreal what was coming out of it. And once again, we'll get to the details in a moment.
Monique Hart from Drag Race says, "I am gooped, America. Like, I feel like the wool has been like uncovered, and I feel like I'm seeing all of these things, and I feel like I've been lied to. I have trusted." Issues now. Right. I mean, I had them before, but now I really have them. I don't know. I just don't know.
But that's why we're all ready for the weekend. I'm going to be going to Santa Barbara with the girlfriends.
Mm-hmm.
I'm meeting up with the girlfriends. I haven't seen these girlfriends in a year and a half. I don't know why we call each other girlfriends.
It's cute. I thought that's what the straight women do, right?
Yes, it's true. But I'm missing a really fun concert that you're going to be going to.
I sure am.
And all of you listening can go to it too. You can win sold out tickets to see Robin at the Palladium. Head over to wearechannelq.com to enter for your chance to win. That's wearechannelq.com.
Yeah, this is a special one too. So you are going to want to be there if you're in the Southern California area.
Yes, it's going to be awesome. I love Robin. Okay, let's get into what's trending in the news right now. And we have news updates top of the hour, every hour. So the Empire actor Jussie Smollett has turned himself into the Chicago police. He did that early Thursday morning. In Smollett's first court appearance this morning, Jussie Smollett was ordered to surrender his passport and his bail was set at $100,000. He posted bond, which means that he's now not in police custody. The charges are this. The Empire actor faces a felony charge of disorderly conduct for allegedly filing a false police report claiming two men attacked him last month and what he said was a hate crime. This was the really interesting part of this morning as well. The Chicago PD held a press conference. Superintendent Eddie Johnson broke down some really interesting facts about the case and used the time to slam Jussie.
This announcement today recognizes that Empire actor Jussie Smollett took advantage of the pain and anger of racism to promote his career. I'm left hanging my head and asking why. Why would anyone, especially an African-American man, use the symbolism of a noose to make false accusations?
That was Superintendent Eddie Johnson at a press conference held this morning. It was really interesting to hear him talk a bit more about the case, but more importantly, to talk about the implications of Jussie doing this on Chicago, on hate crimes, and overall the perception that we've all felt, you know, and the community is feeling right now, and really asking for an apology from Jussie in terms of what he put the Chicago PD through. And so I just felt it was really interesting to listen to this, and we'll be going more into this throughout the show.
Yeah.
But just how he made the Chicago PD look like they were heroes in this, and that obviously Jussie, he is still claiming he is innocent, his team is, but there are a lot of details that show otherwise.
Yeah.
And we'll be bringing those up later in the show. Our cue of the day, our question of the day, what could have been Jesse's motivation behind the attack? Was he dissatisfied with his salary, as many are saying, on Empire? Or did he just want to prove a point about racism in America after he had these threatening letters that were sent to him? We have a psychologist joining us later in the show to break it down. Our Let's Go There topic of the day, we go there on Jesse backlash. And there is a lot, including those responses from Donald Trump and the MAGA supporters who are now responding to the story.
Which, yeah, that's the political side. I think this has been very political. Like, it's just the, it's been very divisive for the political climate that we're in currently. So I can't wait for us to break this down and really understand, like, what does this mean, kind of, and what does this, how is this going to change how we look at certain situations?
Definitely. And coming up, what's trending in the news? Zach Stafford, editor-in-chief of The Advocate, is joining us for more details from the court today and what could be happening to Jussie Smollett next. Welcome back. That's right. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on the radio and radio.com. And guess what? We're on Alexa. Just say play Channel Q on radio.com to listen to our station 24/7. And now we are continuing with all things Jussie Smollett. Earlier today, Chicago PD Superintendent Eddie Johnson spoke out about the Smollett investigation, touching on many things, including how they intend to look at hate crimes in the future.
Put the national spotlight on Chicago for something that is both egregious and untrue is simply shameful. I'm also concerned about what this means moving forward for hate crimes. Now, of course, the Chicago Police Department will continue to investigate all reports of these types of incidents with the same amount of vigor that we did with this one. But my concern is that hate crimes will now publicly be met with a level of skepticism that previously didn't happen.
Joining us to break all of this down, Zach Stafford, editor and chief at The Advocate. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Of course. Good to be with you guys.
I know you've been busy making a lot of appearances. It seems like a lot of people want to hear from you, and that makes sense because not only are you at The Advocate, but you were based out of Chicago for a while. When you hear something like that from the superintendent, Eddie Johnson, from the Chicago PD, what do you think?
I mean, it's really surprising, and that's something I feel like I've been saying a lot on TV today, because for many years, Chicago hasn't responded to crimes like this ever, especially when they're identity-based. Historically, the city is much more tight-lipped. They don't speak at length about identity, and I don't know of a time when they announce that an incident has happened that they openly also call it racist and homophobic without it being proved. So I'm interested to see what the future looks like for the city. Just in the past, 3 months or so, 2 transgender women of color were murdered and the police didn't really talk about it. Activists had to literally protest in front of the headquarters to get information. So I hope this is a new era for them, but historically they have not shown the same commitment to being as transparent as they have been.
Yeah, and they're also known to be very corrupt. So I feel like that side of things comes into play, at least for me, when I'm hearing about all this evidence and everything, and that it just so happens that a reporter is around the corner, a news journalist, to hear or not hear these screams that Jussie had reported to the police. It just all seems too convenient. But that could just be me looking at the other side. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm curious. I've been interviewing a lot of people, and they keep saying the same things. And also, apologies for the sirens in the background. But they've been saying the same as you all. And I even said that on MSNBC today. Fox News has already put out a report saying that I'm trying to say that Trump is framing Jussie. But that's not the case. I know, it's funny. But what we're all trying to think about is, we just recently saw the Laquan McDonald case where Jason Van Dyke was convicted and proven that he was lying, and the police kind of crowded around him and protected him in his lies. So we have very high-profile incidences, and that's just one of many, where we've seen the police coordinate to kind of save themselves. I think it's fair for people to ask that question right now with Jussie. The evidence is really stacked against him, so he could be found guilty. But to have questions around the systems and how they work, I think it's fair.
Are valid. Yeah, I totally agree. I think especially the other conversations that are kind of circling around this, especially after Trump's interesting response to this and in support of course, his MAGA supporters. I wanted to kind of pick your brain on that. What were your reactions when you saw Trump's, response?
I knew it was going to happen. I was just waiting for it. It was like, it's going to get there. That tweet's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And you know, we knew that the central point of this incident was that it was Trump supporters attacking a famous black gay man.
Right.
That's where people were really obsessed. They're like, oh my God, either on the left, they're saying, oh my God, I can't believe the Trump supporters are that crazy that they'll even attack a celebrity. On the right, they're saying, we're not actually racist. What are you talking about? We would never do this. So that central part of it being a Trump supporter, now that that's not real, you're seeing that he's going to really use this as a political tool, and people on the right will, to kind of undo or rationalize any violence that comes out of their party or their media. So we have given them something that's pretty productive to use, actually.
Yeah, do you think, especially the way this investigation has even been handled, and obviously the backlash that Chicago, the Chicago Police Department has received in the past with dealing with people of color, how do you feel like this investigation has been handled, and was it handled professionally?
I think if we do find that Jesse is guilty and all these things do ring true, I would be incredibly impressed by the detectives' ability to coordinate and work really quickly to solve a very, very complicated crime. Because if you heard, I mean, you heard what happened.
Like, right.
There were multiple cars involved. There were phones being dropped. There's like cameras being thought about. Many of the crimes that happen in Chicago aren't that, complicated. And they don't ever get solved. I mean, Chicago has a solve rate for crimes at 24%, I believe, last time I checked. So if, you know, they are true, I hope to see this continued effort only passed on to other cases.
Yeah, and let's talk about some of those details that were revealed today, including all those cameras when the superintendent, Eddie Johnson, spoke, and they were just breaking down all of this. It was crazy. It seemed like they could really track every move on every street. What are your thoughts on that, and what do we need to know right now?
Well, people are learning something about Chicago. That's true. Chicago is one of the most surveillance cities in the world.
Oh, it needs to be.
And yes, the city has invested a lot of resources in those surveillance systems. So it's very true. There's been lots of reports of different technology they have where they're able to, you know, use phone information to get to gather evidence and use the security cameras that are on every block and every bus. So it is true, and people are getting to see the full ranks of surveillance that is in a major American city, which I'm sure people are kind of freaked out about. But a question that's going to come up is, why don't we utilize these resources all the time for different cases? Why are we just now knowing that they exist? And if we are using them, what are we using them for? And why don't we hear about that?
Yeah.
So these are lots of questions coming out.
And why is there a 24% crime? What did you say? Rate where they solve crimes if they have all these cameras?
Yes.
That doesn't make sense.
Yes.
All right. We're going to continue to break this down and give you the latest details on the case and investigation, including what came out of the court today with Zach Stafford, editor-in-chief of The Advocate. More coming up after this. Welcome back. Or let's go there with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on the radio and radio.com. We are continuing with this show of Let's Go There, all about Jesse Smollett and just breaking down everything that we heard from the court, from the press conference earlier today, and what the future holds for the Empire Star. Back with us is Zach Stafford. He's from The Advocate, and he's here to share more. Welcome back.
Hey, yeah. Good to be here.
So Zach, we spoke about, you know, the point of view from the Chicago PD, who has spoken out a lot about this. What are you hearing in terms of Jesse Smollett's team?
Yeah, so I speak with his team, I would say, at least once a day.
Oh, you do?
We're best girlfriends these days. Yes, and they are maintaining their position that Jesse is innocent, that Jesse did not do the things they're alleging, or that they've even charged him on. Even today, I spoke to them. They called me in the middle of the day, or a source did, rather, not even just them, but someone called me up.
Okay.
Connected to him to say that, you know, that they refute the salary charge, that he did not do this because he's upset with the salary, and that there's no evidence he's upset with the salary. So they're maintaining through their crisis firms and their big defense team now that they're not guilty.
Yeah, because that was also something I had a question about, because the New York Magazine put out saying that according to two industry sources familiar with the situation, neither he nor his reps have made any noise about a pay hike in recent months. So I think we're speaking what we've been hearing in this kind of, and when it comes to what's been going on and all these different sources, it's like, what do you feel like we can believe at this point?
Yeah, I mean, something I keep telling people is that what we're experiencing as a community of, you know, consumers of media is the messiness of an investigation. Usually, investigations of this on this topic are not public. Like, you're not getting minute-to-minute updates, and you're not part of, like, all the twists and turns of an investigation. Because the reason why we call it an investigation is that we're figuring out a lot of subjective ideas that are hypotheses. So they're not going to all be correct. So when we report on, you know, the Chicago police are following this tip, and it doesn't come out to be true, that doesn't kind of say that the investigation is bad. It doesn't say anything about the media. You just were giving some, like, backroom tea that typically you don't get. So I think, like, people are going to have to really, you know, like, hang in there, wait till, like, the trial, when the police really show the evidence, his people kind of defend him against it. And then we'll, at the end of that, when he's either charged or let go, we'll know then. But what you're dealing with is the stress of living in a digital age where media is constant, Twitter is constant, and we as media creators are having to feed you constantly. And it gets, I mean, I feel like you're probably feeling a little hungover by now.
We have no idea what you're talking about.
Sure. I'm like over here, like, honey, I need to go take 3 naps in the first 6 months. I don't know what to do at this point.
It is. Again, just to catch people up on the latest coming out of this story, Jussie Smollett did turn himself into the Chicago police early this morning. He then posted bond. He appeared in his first court appearance. He was ordered to surrender his passport, and his bail was set at $100,000. And then the Chicago PD did hold a press conference where we did learn a bit more, but more importantly, I think they specifically more so focused on what their perspective was on the case and what the future held for hate crimes, and how, you know, it glorified how the Chicago PD responded to this specifically. Again, joining us on the phone is Zach Stafford, editor-in-chief of The Advocate. Based on all that information that we know that happened this morning, there's other evidence that was revealed today. Can you go into that?
Yeah, so something that was really striking that happened today was that the police were able to outline to the public exactly how they pieced together this story that have led the state attorney's office to press charges. They were able to say that there's tons of camera footage across the city, from police cameras to bus cameras to taxi cab cameras, that are allowing them to understand that these two men were at the scene of the incident. They, through their phone records that the police were able to get, had been in communication with Jussie not only before the incident, but an hour after it. They spoke to him while they flew to Nigeria for 2 weeks while the police were investigating. Mm-hmm. So we were able to see the technological part of this, that the police relied deeply on phone records, surveillance records, and interviews with people that they kind of ran into while they were either buying rope at a local, like a store of some sort, to like the subway people, to this random news reporter from NBC who corroborated to the police in an interview that he did not hear any racial or homophobic language when he was parking his car next to the scene, which, you know, is curious that a reporter was next to all this and didn't notice anything. So we were able to see all the backdrop of all this. And all of this they have proof of. And that's the big thing here, is that they have a lot of proof, and they've submitted it to prosecutors, and they're going to go forward with the case.
Just to put my investigator hat on, because I like to pretend.
When that
NBC reporter was something really interesting to me, and we talked about this, me and Ryan, how just surprising it was a new part of the evidence that we hadn't heard before. If she is a reporter, why didn't she speak out, unless I guess the police had told her to be quiet?
Yeah, I mean, I was really interested in that, too. I was literally on MSNBC when we all found out it was an NBC reporter, and I was like, wait, girl, like, hold up.
That's her tip. That's what you wait your whole career for.
Here's the thing.
Have that tip.
That Charlie guy, Charlie DeMar, who's been killing it with all the reporting out of Chicago, honey, that could have been her. I don't know. She missed her moment.
Right. Like, that really could have. Like, so I was like, who is this person? But, like, I would assume, like, police did find this person pretty quickly. And because they're a witness, they're going to be given different rules by the police. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. The police won't speak. They're trying to get them to explain more about everything all day. And they're like, what we said is what we said, and we're not speaking anymore. So we'll see. But that person will be a witness in any trial that happens.
Yeah, and this bond proffer was released and is on social media from this reporter that we've been following. It was like reading a script of a movie. So we discovered that he did Molly, one of these brothers sold it to him. You're speaking to his team right now. How much can they say is true versus false of this? It all seems pretty real from this, but that's their account.
So a lot of times when I speak to his team, they'll say, well, Zach, this is the first time we're hearing of this. We'll check. So they're maintaining ignorance and saying that they need to go find out. To be fair, these are really intimate details of Jesse's life, like the fact that he does MDMA, something his PR team may not be aware of. So they do need to check, and that's why this is getting quite messy, is that, like, we're dealing with the inner workings of a private person, of a celebrity's private life.
Yeah.
And things are getting revealed, and his family's having to help him figure it out. So it must be incredibly hard for him, no matter if he's guilty or not, of, like, this huge microscope on every part of his life.
So just to wrap this up, when we talk about victims and kind of out of this entire thing, where do you see, for the LGBTQ plus community and just people of color, where do you see this lands for them in the movement that we're continuing on fighting for when it comes to equal rights and just being heard and the whole victim blaming and shaming situation?
Yeah. I mean, from all the conversations I'm having with leaders in the community, is they're really trying to focus on the work they have been doing without Jesse already.
Yeah.
Many national nonprofits have been doing victim anti-violence and victim work for decades. And Jesse Smollett has never really spoken out, particularly in hate crimes. He's talked about violence against people of color, but he's not been a hate crime advocate.
Right.
So many of them are going to try to step in this role and say, hey, you know, statistically incredibly rare. And just like all things with celebrities, they are anomalies, and we can never predict what celebrities are going to do. Do not hold private citizens who are not famous to the same standard as you're holding this one person. Because even if a person, you know, a regular person on the street files a hate crime, most of these hate crimes aren't even taken seriously. So you're never going to see this level, or very rarely you'll see this level of investigation.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to lean into that. Like, do not make us held accountable for a celebrity.
Yeah. All right, Zach Safford, thank you so much again for joining us. Editor-in-Chief of The Advocate. We hope to have you back.
For sure.
All right, coming up, we are moving into some more afternoon tea and what's trending in the news. We're blending it all together here. The show is about all things Jesse Smollett as we look into more of the details around this investigation, including what, Ryan?
Yeah, so we're going to be getting into celebrity reactions and some celebrities that aren't speaking at all.
We are continuing our coverage of the Jesse Smollett case, including a ton of celebrity reactions that are popping up on social media. So what's the tea there, Ryan?
Well, that's the thing. There are celebrity reactions, and we've actually been talking about them over the week about, you know, some celebrities are coming in and they're jumping in. Well, first, let's talk about Fox, 20th Century Fox TV, and how their newest statement said, "We understand the seriousness of the matter and respect the legal process. We are evaluating the situation and we are considering our options." So that is their statement, which came after, you know, the press conference that we've been obviously talking about this entire show so far. Actor and comedian Tyler Perry has continued to stick by his pal Smollett, whom he says he's personally spoken with. He said he is adamant that he's telling the truth. Also, everyone that I know who knows him says that he is not that kind of person who would make up such a horrible and awful thing. Tyler ended up explaining this on Facebook, though he admitted the evidence seems to be stating otherwise, which is interesting. It's kind of like Tyler is like, I talked to him and everyone I've talked to around him. And that's the thing. The reason why we saw so much rallying behind Jesse, and I was talking about this with the Morning Beats, Jay Rodriguez, is because people know Jesse. They know the type of person he is. And this is just so left field. It's like, where is this coming from?
I mean, that's what sociopaths are. It does come out of left field, if that's the case.
If that is the case. Well, Andy Cohen is kind of also, he's just over. Like you said earlier in the show, he's like, I don't even want to get on social media. He actually ended up tweeting saying, "My head is exploding this morning. I have to get off Twitter. This story is pathetic." And then Van Jones, of course, from CNN, who had a very kind of interesting thing to say on CNN that I felt kind of was powerful. Let's play it.
This is the fall of an icon, and I don't think people understand how important he has been in the black community. Empire as a show, to have him as a beloved character, I think did a great deal to knock back homophobia in the black community. The fact that Empire has been celebrated, the fact that he has been celebrated, and you see homophobia in the black community through his eyes on this show. This is a Jackie Robinson against homophobia in the black community, an icon, a beloved icon. And now you have the fall of an icon at a time when we need icons, when we need heroes, when we need people who stand up. So the level of betrayal, if this is true,
yes,
is so deep. You can see it in your voice. You can see it in your face. It's almost hard to get the words out because of how beloved he has been and how hurt we were when we thought that he had been hurt.
Wow, that was Van Jones. That's a very powerful statement. Do you feel, and I was actually surprised you used the word icon. I mean, I know he was huge.
But to
say icon...
That was what was the only thing that was striking to me that he said that is because I wouldn't go as far as to say Jesse Smollett was an icon. I will say, and I've been saying this, that Jesse Smollett has had an amazing, amazing career. And I think because of this incident, a lot of people are just becoming aware of who he is and his work and what he's done. But specifically for the Black community, I think it has been, he has led a charge of being on a huge popular show that everyone knew of, everyone loved. There's so many beloved characters on that. It's very shocking. And his character on that story, in that show, had such a powerful storyline of his father dealing with homophobia in a way where it showed a flashback of when Jesse's character was a child, his dad put him in a trash can because he was wearing a pair of his mom's heels. And so it's really touched on what, you know, homophobia looks like in the African-American community. And how it can really affect you. And I think that's what he's saying there, as he's kind of an icon in some ways, because he has been, portraying a character that has so much depth. But Senator Kamala Harris actually released a statement an hour ago saying this, and we're going to end up wrapping this up and getting on with the show. She said, like most of you, I've seen the reports about Jesse Smollett, and I'm upset, frustrated, and disappointed. When anyone makes false claims to police, it not only diverts resources away from serious investigations, but it makes it more difficult for other victims of crimes to come forward. She said, I will always condemn racism and homophobia. We must always confront hate directly, and we must always seek justice. This is what I will keep fighting for. Now, if you want to read the entire full statement of hers, head over to We Are Channel Q. Even that, and for more afternoon tea on Jesse Smollett. And make sure to favorite us on the radio.com app.
There you go. All right, more What's Trending in the News coming up top of the hour, including a statement from GLAAD they just released. Stay tuned for that. Welcome back. You're listening to Let's Go There with Ciaran Ryan on the new Channel Q on the radio and radio.com. And remember, radio.com is an app, so download it and find Channel Q, favorite us, so you can listen to our show as well as all the other amazing shows we've got here at 24/7 and on the go. And so now there's this bond proffer that is being shared everywhere that really breaks down, you know, everything in this case. And it's crazy to see. This is from the Chicago PD side that we want to discuss here on the show. And I want to get your thoughts, Ryan. And we're also going to talk about this GLAAD statement that they just released on What's Trending in the News. The bond proffer that now you can see, who's it? Charlie from the CBS reporter?
Charlie DeMar. He is a CBS Chicago 7 reporter.
Yeah.
He's been killing it out, all of this.
Yeah. And the latest news to come out of that is it really gives a clear timeline as to what happened. And if you want to understand more of the events that went down, you can go to wearechannelq.com. But basically, it talks about one of the brothers, Abel, who was on the show Empire with Jesse, and how they were friends and they worked out together. And actually, Jesse got drugs from him, specifically Molly. And this was a surprise, you know, this was a surprise thing that came out of this because it was something very personal. Right. And so he was providing drugs to him. But then also before they were going to Nigeria, they had booked this trip to Nigeria. And this trip was something that everyone brought up, that the incident happened and then they flew to Nigeria for 2 weeks. And, oh, isn't that strange? But it seemed
it was already planned. Yes. That trip was already planned, apparently. And this was just... everything falls into pieces within this bond proffer, which was presented in the bond hearing today to the judge. It was one of those things where it just felt like, oh, well, this was just an idea that Jesse automatically had after he felt that it wasn't the response to that letter that was sealed with, it was like basically a death threat, and it was like the powder, which we ended up finding out it was Tylenol. The response from the Fox was not as important, I guess, to him, and they didn't really do as much. And so he came up with this
elaborate plan.
Yeah, this plan to do this.
And this was according to the statement from the Chicago PD. So it is not from Jesse's camp. This is what, based on the testimony from the two brothers, and one of them, Abel, who's the one that is friends or was friends and worked out with Jesse and appeared on Empire as a stand-in. He went, before going to Nigeria, he went to meet with Jesse to give him Molly. And that's when Jussie also caught him up on what was happening. As you mentioned, this letter that he got, and he didn't like Fox's reaction to it, and he had a plan.
Yeah.
And then shared that plan with the brothers, and they were into it. He said he would provide them with money. And he basically, that night that it was going to happen, it was supposed to happen at 10 p.m. His flight from New York got delayed. It got pushed. And it was all there. It seems like it makes sense from the way this bond proffer lays it out.
Well, yeah, because also this is why text messages are being subpoenaed, because all of this happened in text messages in some ways. Actually, when the initial plan was concocted, he said, Jussie actually texted Abel saying, might need your help on the low, you around to meet up and talk face to face.
Yeah, so this isn't just based on, and a lot of people were questioning the two brothers. This is based on also not just their testimony, but text messages that went back and forth and calls that they traced back to Jussie and the brothers before the incident happened.
Cell phone data, location, all these things.
The day it happened, including Ubers and taxis and all these cameras they discussed, as well as after the fact when this all, you know, came out and was released and it was a hate crime that was everywhere in the headlines. They were basically talking, you know, he was in touch with them when they were in Nigeria. Yeah. They came back 2 weeks later, landed, and the police were there to arrest them. And the rest, we know, is history.
Can I actually tell you what the most shocking thing about this entire thing was? Girl, how we talked about this, where we were like, why haven't we found out how the money was transferred or how they got it?
Yep.
Well, it comes to find out that Jussie actually wrote them a personal check.
Predated check.
A predated personal check that he signed, which I was like, dude, if you're going to be a criminal, there are plenty of resources like Law and Order, SVU, I mean, NCIS, all these things that will teach you how to honestly be a really good criminal. And he just failed at it immensely.
And in this footage, the surveillance footage from the store that they bought all these props that they used, it's like, what more do you need to show that you're going to be possibly doing something bad? You're going to a store and buying black gloves, a black mask, and all this stuff. I just feel like it all doesn't make sense, as well as them keeping the receipts. This seems just like it was completely not, if this was set up the way the bond proffer says it was set up, that there was not a lot of thinking that went into it.
Yeah, and even with the bond proffer, we find out about the first kind of witness that we had no clue about, which was this NBC News Chicago employee. And there's a lot of things that really were released throughout this that we were like, I was very shocked about. And I just need to know the legal perspective.
Yes, and we mentioned before the break, GLAAD just made an announcement. Of course, the largest LGBTQ media advocacy organization, they are, and they partnered with Color of Change for this announcement. And the Color of Change is the nation's largest online racial justice organization. This is their joint statement that they made in response to news about actor Jussie Smollett. As we learn more details about the arrest, we remain focused on the urgent fight against the very real issues of racism, homophobia, and hate violence. FBI data shows that hate crimes are on the rise nationwide, and that fact cannot get lost in the discussion around Jussie's arrest. While Jussie's situation is troubling and concerning, anyone who is a victim of hate violence should never be hesitant to speak out and share their stories. And I think overall, that's what a lot of people are saying who possibly did support Jussie, and still he has not been proven guilty fully, but are coming out to release statements. Okay, as you mentioned, we want to talk more about the law and legalities around it all. Public defender Eliza Orlins will be joining us to share what's next and how this bond proffer could impact his innocence. Welcome back to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on the radio and radio.com. We are continuing to look into the Jussie Smollett investigation, and joining us now is public defender Eliza Orlins. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me back.
Yeah, I mean, a lot has happened in the past 24 hours. We seem to need you every single day right now at this point. Now that Jussie, though, is in police custody, could these investigators compel him to talk? Because it seems like his team is still saying he's innocent.
So, interestingly, he's actually no longer in police custody. He was in custody. He turned himself in this morning at about 5 a.m. But just in the last few hours, he bonded out. I think what's called a detainer bond, what they call a D bond, was set in the amount of $100,000. Mm. And a detainer bond requires you to pay about 10% of the total amount. So he was able to pay the $10,000 and another requirement of his release was that he surrender his passport. So he actually has been released at this point on bond. But regardless, they could not have compelled him to talk. He is represented by an attorney. He has the right to remain silent. So I don't think that they would have been able to compel him to speak.
But just in hearing about everything coming out of the case and in watching and listening to the press conference, so much is coming out of the Chicago PD and the other side. But I just feel like they're not controlling the narrative, Jesse's team. So at what point, where does that leave him?
I mean, I think that this entire thing is going to be extremely destructive to him, you know, as a person. It's going to be destructive to his career, to himself, to, I think it's destructive, you know, on all levels. The facts as they're coming out do sound worse and worse for him. And so I think that, you know, this is going to give people the ability to say, oh, all these hoaxes, you know, and act like there isn't actually a problem with racism and homophobia and hate crimes in this country.
Definitely. So he is now out of police custody, as you mentioned. We've been hearing about everything coming out of the court, and it just seems like a lot of it makes it seem like he's guilty. He hasn't... By him posting bond, does that mean he's guilty? Like, are we going to hear that? I think that everyone's just waiting to hear from him specifically what's going on.
You know, posting bond has nothing to do with guilt or innocence. It's just, you know, bond was set in this amount because I think the judge probably determined that he was not a flight risk. You know, they made him surrender his passport so he can't flee the country because he's facing these charges. I read that during the bond hearing, the judge said to Jesse, you are presumed innocent, but if these allegations are true, they are utterly outrageous. So I think, you know, we can expect that if he is subsequently found guilty of this, you know, he will probably be facing the maximum potentially in terms of prison time because people will want to throw the book at him for making these allegations.
Definitely.
Yeah, so now there was a bond proffer kind of released in court during his bond hearing, and it was all of this detailed information of what they presume is possibly happened from times, dates, locations. And there was actually a very interesting thing that stood out to me that said, while the stage attack was occurring, a witness who was an employee of NBC News Chicago had just parked and exited her vehicle just around the corner from the location of the stage attack. Now, they were saying that because they asked her if she had heard any yelling or anything like that. I feel like that was the first time we had heard of any type of witness in this situation. What does that look like for bringing of new, I guess, evidence of some sorts or a new witness into this case?
Right, absolutely. So I did have a chance to read the bond proffer, which really lays out the facts of the case in a way that we hadn't seen the evidence before. You know, there are text messages included in it. There's, you know, details of times and dates and places of conversations. And then this is the first time we heard about this NBC News Chicago employee who was a witness to the actual incident. She was right around the corner.
Yeah.
And had there been screaming and yelling that took place while she was standing right there, she would have heard it. So when the Chicago PD released their information that they had, you know, informants, that they had other witnesses, I think this might have been who they were referring to back when we didn't know their secret sources.
Definitely. I mean, come on, the best witness to have, a journalist who was around the corner.
That was like one of the very key sketchy things for me also. But there was also obviously through the press conference, there was a lot of talk because the police chief, Superintendent Eddie Johnson, said that absolute justice would be an apology to the city that he smeared. Now, and when we're talking in terms of apology and public apology from Jesse's team, would you actually advise a client to actually do that? And is that in some way admitting fault?
I think that would be admitting fault. And I would certainly never advise a client to apologize to the city. You know, I mean, eventually, assuming if there's a guilty plea or if there's a trial, you know, and if he decides to plead guilty to this and is getting something, I expect that, you know, we will hear more about remorse and why this transpired and how it happened. But while the charges are pending, you know, I certainly would not recommend that a client apologize to anyone in any way while they're professing their innocence.
Again, public defender Eliza Orlins is joining us as we dig into this Jussie Smollett investigation and case. We have a question about the Fox side of things, his show Empire that he stars in. It seems like they've been now implicated into this for possibly not paying him enough, and that's the motive behind this, or that they didn't take this threatening letter that he got seriously. Could they possibly sue him now for defamation of any kind?
You know, civil lawsuits have a different standard than criminal cases, and corporations, you know, can bring civil suits if someone is damaging their business reputation. But I think that seeing that is probably highly unlikely. I can't imagine that they would really go through with that that type of claim.
Yeah, and lastly, can we ask just what's next? As someone who is in the law, what can we all expect from the, you know, as media and also as the public who's following this?
Absolutely. So next will be now that he's no longer in police custody, you know, he has posted his bond. Another court date will be set. He will return to court for, you know, for discovery, for motions. And then ultimately this case will either come to a trial or there'll be some sort of plea bargain. You know, this is charged as a felony, but he could plead down to a misdemeanor and, you know, try to avoid spending any more time incarcerated for this. Maybe some type of community service as a plea or probation or something else to avoid any jail time. But maybe they'll take it all the way to trial. Maybe he'll continue to fight this case. It's hard to say, but we will certainly be following all the developments.
Definitely. Well, thank you for joining us again. And again, for more, go to wearechannelq.com. Eliza Orlins, public defender, will be definitely having you back as this continues. Coming up on Let's Go There, we are diving into our topic of the day with our political expert, Richard Fowler. We go there on Donald Trump's response to all of this. That's right. Welcome back. Where Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on the radio and radio.com. We actually have some breaking news, a new statement from Jussie Smollett's legal team. All right, this is what they have to say. Today, we witnessed an organized law enforcement spectacle that has no place in the American legal system. The presumption of innocence, a bedrock in the search for justice, was trampled upon at the expense of Mr. Smollett, and notably on the eve of a mayoral election. Mr. Smollett is a young man of impeccable character and integrity who fiercely and solemnly maintains his innocence and feels betrayed by a system that apparently wants to skip due process and proceed directly to sentencing. That was a statement from Jussie Smollett's legal team. And People.com are reporting that after posting bond, Jussie is actually back on the set of Empire. That's the latest news. More What's Trending in the News, top of the hour. In the meantime, we do have Richard Fowler, our political expert, joining us back here again. Welcome.
It's good to be here. What a day. What a day. What a day. Shira and Ryan, what a day.
Yes.
What a day. What a day.
And so, all right, one, with this latest news and this statement, what do you think about that coming from his team?
So let me say this first, and I think it's very important. No matter where you live, no matter where you're from, if you live in any of the 50 states of the United States, we believe in due process here. And I think Jussie, just like any other person deserves, he's innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah.
But that being said, what this prosecutor, the evidence that the prosecutor laid out in her discovery, what the Chicago Police Department and the U.S. Attorney, the District Attorney's Office in Cook County was able to provide, if any of those things are true, then Jussie has some explaining to do to LGBTQ people all across America who stood by him for this entirety of this. And let's be very clear.
Yeah.
And allow me to say this, and I think it's very important that I say this, is that Jussie's case, whether or not he's innocent or guilty, is an exception, not the norm. Every single day, all across this country, people of color, especially if they identify as LGBTQ, are beaten for how they show up in the world, for how they love, and for how they represent. It happens in Washington, D.C., where I live. It happens in Atlanta. It's happening right now in California, where Ed Buck, who is a prominent DNC donor, there's no indictment, there's no investigation. There have been two black gay men found in his house dead. So let's be very clear. our bodies are still on the line here. And I think if I didn't say that point, I would be doing a big misjustice to our community and what we deal with every single day of the week, every single day of the year, for being discriminated against sheerly by how we show up in the world.
Definitely. Richard Fowler, again, a political expert, Fox News contributor, joining us right now as we break down the Jussie Smollett investigation and also the reactions from now the president. We're going to be getting to that, and MAGA supporters. But let's talk about, you know, I guess there's a lot of people, though, of color. All right, I do have a question. The Chicago PD do have a lot of people of color in the Chicago PD. So don't you think race is important to them as well?
No, I think race is absolutely important to them, Shira. And don't get me wrong. I think if this, like I said, Jussie deserves due process, then I'm going to give Jussie all the due process that he can get. And I pray every night that Jussie is right and every one of these prosecutors and every one of these police officers is wrong. But every day the evidence stacks up against him, right? But I pray that he's right and there's going to be a rabbit in this hat and they're going to say, this is all wrong, this is all a hoax, and it's all over. But here's why this matters, is because in Chicago, there are black LGBTQ bodies that are on the line every single day. They're either black trans women, they're either gay black men who live in the south side and the west of that city that the police don't do the same level of investigation for. And I think that's important to remember as we think about this case. You have to look at this case in the entirety, not in a vacuum, that we live in a society where our lives are in danger every single day. And Jussie's case is the exception, not the norm. When you have 12 CPD detectives working on one case, that is the exception, not the norm, especially on hate crimes.
Yeah, no, especially that. I really want to touch in the political aspect of this, because obviously we're in this very divisive political climate, and Trump's response to this, saying at Jussie Smollett, what about MAGA and the tens of millions of people you insulted with your racist and dangerous comments? I want to talk about why do you feel, and of course this may be just like duh, but Donald Trump's response, and what was your reaction to that?
Well, I mean, like I said, it's all precedent. For me, it's all based on how this criminal case proceeds out. And if the evidence in a jury of Jussie's peers, a real jury selection of his peers, find that he made a mistake here, then we should be asking the question of, are we serving the LGBTQ community in this country as well as serving other communities? I think that's the broader question. And I think for the president to tweet something like that without understanding the implications for the LGBTQ community, especially given the huge case happening out in West Hollywood, where you have a prominent DNC donor who two black men were found dead in his apartment, in his condo, and he has not been indicted. He hasn't been brought in for questioning. And everybody's looking like, wait a minute, how is this happening? Then we've got to ask ourselves the question. Yes, for Jussie to do this, he's basically sort of preyed on sort of the fault lines, right? Because remember, Chicago is a place where we had a Laquan McDonald murder, right? And we had him murdered by the hands of the Chicago Police Department and the black community looking sort of like, wait a minute, you killed one of us and you have no accountability for it. So now for you to, knowing all of that, for you to do this in Chicago, you do this, if this is all true, if this is a hoax, as the prosecutors are claiming, for you to do all of this, this is problematic. It's problematic for everything that we stand for and everything that we have fought for as an LGBTQ people of color movement.
Definitely. And we actually have some celebrities who responded to that Trump tweet. We'll be bringing that up on the show as well as some more MAGA supporters, what they think. And I'm sure you won't be surprised. After this, we'll be getting into that with Richard Fowler, our political expert. Keep on listening to Let's Go There on the new Channel Q. That's right. We are back. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on the radio and radio.com. We are continuing to bring you more details around the Jussie Smollett investigation. And there's so much out there that it is our entire show, because as we are even speaking, there's new statements, new news to be released. We have Richard Fowler joining us, our political expert, Fox News contributor. Welcome back.
Hey, guys. Good to be back.
Yes. So, of course, we were talking about Donald Trump's tweet in response to all this. Yes. We're inclusive and fluid here. So Donald Trump posted, Jussie Smollett, what about MAGA and the tens of millions of people you insulted with your racist and dangerous comments? Hashtag MAGA. Well, Patton Oswalt then posted and replied back, and we can't say everything because he does say some bad words. Patton goes, way to go, Jesse. You just handed this racist bad word a get out of race baiting free card that he's going to wave around like a soiled diaper until he's reelected. So with that said, do you feel like this all makes the MAGA community stronger?
I mean, I think it definitely gives him some ammo tonight, right? And let's remember, I'm not saying that everybody that puts on a MAGA hat is racist or homophobic or misogynist, right? But there are, we all witnessed what happened in Charlottesville. And we witnessed the president of the United States come out and say there are good people on both sides. When the majority of Americans are like, no, there's only good people on one side of this debate. So I take the president's comments with a grain of salt.
You think?
And I say to this president, like, if you're serious about and you really care about this community, then talk to this community and work with this community. You promised in your State of the Union that you were gonna curb the spread of HIV by 2030. Let's do it together instead of doing it without us.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I totally agree with everything you're saying, especially by, I think, coming up with this 2020 election and it being so huge. And, of course, with the media, being very involved in this, and a lot of times people were saying, like, there's a tweet, actually, that said, to legitimate media, you created Jussie Smollett. You wrongfully slandered the Covington High School kids. You attempted to destroy Kavanaugh's reputation. We don't need you. And so it feels like there's a shift in the MAGA community that even if Donald Trump, because he is likely to run again, maybe his support system has grown stronger in the sense of in the aspect of the 2020 election.
I mean, I think that's a good point, Ryan. And let me just say this. I think you can't, like, anybody who tries to mix the Covington kids,
right,
and Brett Kavanaugh and Jussie Smollett in the same sentence, really don't understand those are all three different stories that have three different origins that should be discussed differently. None of these stories can be seen in a vacuum, but none of these stories can be seen as also intricately connected. I mean, and I think it's very important that people recognize that and believe that, and also understand that if this is indeed a hoax, and I said this in the last segment, I'll say it again, mm-hmm. I want to give Jesse as much due process as he needs. I think he deserves his day in court like everybody else does. Just like Paul Manafort and Michael Flynn and everybody deserve their day in court before you say that they're guilty. Right?
Yeah.
Definitely.
I think that, so I'm going to say that first, but if this is indeed a hoax, then I don't think you're going to find anybody in the LGBTQ community to defend Jesse. They're like, what you won't do is put what we have worked so hard for. We've fought. And trust me, I know some of the people that were in these fights to get hate to make, bashing gay people or bashing lesbians or bashing queer people, or bashing transgender people against the law. And they fought so hard to do that. And I think I think you have to see the Jussie Smollett case as separate and apart from the fact that each and every day there's LGBTQ people whose bodies are harmed and brutalized, whether by systematic racism, systematic oppression, or by just sheer beating. Right?
Yeah,
and those are the real things.
That's
the truth.
No, it for sure is. And I think especially because of the support has been so strong for Jesse in the beginning of all this with, Senator Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, they really, went forth into bat with the whole lynching thing that they brought to the floor, to the Senate, and then it hasn't made it to the floor yet, or you can explain that because I'm not CNN. But it's one of those things where do you think politicians, especially, do you think they're going to feel comfortable with speaking up more in terms of LGBTQ people and just people of color in general? Because, I mean, even Nancy Pelosi deleted her tweet in support of Jussie Smollett.
I mean, and I think that's the hard part, Ryan, because each and every day, right, there are real people that are hurt by hate crime. There's people that are hurt because of how they show up in the world. It's either happening in their family or it's happening in their community. And that's what the reason why Sharon and Ryan are on in the afternoon is because of that. The reason why I'm on Fox is because of that, because we stand as a testament that you can't do this, and we are bold and we are brave. And I think that's the hard part of this whole thing. And I think I'll be remiss if I didn't mention it. The hard part of this thing, especially for the LGBTQ community of color, is that when we heard it, immediately we all acknowledged it, we identified it, because that's part of our existence as people.
Yeah.
And what this is our grown experience. And so we said, Jesse, you've got to be telling the truth, because we've all experienced slices of what you're talking about from a larger perspective. Right? And that is where the hurt comes in. I think that's where there's so many people in the movement who look like me and look like Ryan who are hurt tonight, because we're like, Jesse, we actually know, we all know what it means to be, for me, to show up as a black gay man in the world, and for Ryan to show up as a black gay man in the world, and for you to take what we have worked so hard for, and for you to take what we know how hard it is to be, and for you to use it, if it is true,
yeah,
as a hoax to benefit your bottom line, that hurts everything that we have fought for, and everything that we show up every day and get on the radio or get on television for. Because we do it for others so that they don't have to go through the same pain that we went through, like Bayard Rustin did it for us. And so that is the hard part about tonight. I mean, there's a lot of people going tonight with a heavy heart because immediately when we heard it, we ran to his rescue because that's what we do as a community. Whether we have disagreements or not disagreements in the club or wherever,
yep,
we are still a community. And we're a community that's used to being oppressed and used to being victimized, and we stand up for each other. And I think that's what hurts the most tonight. You know, like the Trump tweets, miss me. The MAGA people miss me. What hurts tonight the most is he, like our own community dealing with, we stood up for one of our own and they betrayed us, if yeah, this is true.
Yeah. Well,
and that's the hard part.
Richard Fowler, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Fox News contributor, also just named Center for Black Equity. You were named the new chairman, so congratulations.
Yes, look
on
at you doing
that.
Big stuff.
Representing. Okay, more on the Jussie Smollett investigation, what's trending in the news, top of the hour in our cue of the day. What side are you on and what could have been the motive? Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on the radio and radio.com. Welcome back. You can win sold out tickets to see Robin at the Palladium right here in Los Angeles. It's so easy. Just go to wearechannelq.radio.com to enter for your chance to win. That show is happening this weekend. Two tickets for Robin at the Hollywood Palladium. Wearechannelq.radio.com to enter. Okay, we're getting into what's trending in the news. Top of the hour. Here are the latest updates from the Jussie Smollett investigation. He did turn himself into the Chicago police this morning. He appeared in his first court appearance. He was ordered to surrender his passport, and Jussie's bail was set at $100,000. He posted bond. The charges are this. The Empire actor faces a felony charge of disorderly conduct for allegedly filing a false police report claiming two men attacked him last month in a reported hate crime. He is now back on set at Empire, according to People.com. Now we have Zach Stafford, editor-in-chief of The Advocate, who actually was on our show earlier, who's in touch with Jussie Smollett's team. And here's what he had to say.
Yeah, so I speak with his team, I would say, at least once a day.
Oh, you do?
we're best girlfriends these days. Yes, and they are maintaining the position that Jussie is innocent, that Jussie did not do the things they're alleging, or that they've even charged him on. Even today, I spoke to them. They called me in the middle of the day, or a source did, rather, not even just them, but someone called me up.
Okay.
Connected to him to say that, you know, that they refute the salary charge, that he did not do this because he's upset with the salary, and that there's no evidence he's upset with the salary. So they're maintaining through their crisis firms and their big defense team now that they're not guilty.
Yeah, because that was also something I had a question about, because the New York Magazine put out saying that according to two industry sources familiar with the situation, neither he nor his reps have made any noise about a pay hike in recent months. So I think we're speaking what we've been hearing in this kind of, in when it comes to what's been going on and all these different sources, it's like, what do you feel like we can believe at this point?
Yeah, I mean, something I keep telling people is that what we're experiencing as a community of, you know, consumers of media is the messiness of an investigation. Usually, investigations of this on this topic are not public. Like, you're not getting minute-to-minute updates, and you're not part of, like, all the twists and turns of an investigation. Because the reason why we call it an investigation is that we're figuring out a lot of subjective ideas that are hypotheses. So they're not going to all be correct. So when we report on, you know, the Chicago police are following this tip, and it doesn't come out to be true, that doesn't kind of say that the investigation is bad. It doesn't say anything about the media. You just were giving some, like, backroom tea that typically you don't get. So I think, like, people are going to have to really, you know, like, hang in there, wait till, like, the trial, when the police really show the evidence, his people kind of defend him against it. And then we'll, at the end of that, when he's either charged or let go, we'll know then. But what you're dealing with is the stress of living in a digital age where media is constant, Twitter is constant,
yeah,
and we as media creators are having to feed you constantly, and it gets I mean, I feel like you're probably feeling a little hungover by now.
We have no idea what you're talking about.
For sure. I'm like over here like, honey, I need to go take 3 naps in the first 6 months. I don't know what to do at this point.
It is. Again, just to catch people up on the latest coming out of this story, Jussie Smollett did turn himself into the Chicago police early this morning. He then posted bond. He appeared in his first court appearance. He was ordered to surrender his passport, and his bail was set at $100,000. And then the Chicago PD did hold a press conference where we did learn a bit more, but more importantly, I think they specifically more so focused on what their perspective was on the case and what the future held for hate crimes and how, you know, it glorified how the Chicago PD responded to this. Specifically, again, joining us on the phone is Zach Stafford, editor-in-chief of The Advocate. Based on all that information that we know that happened this morning, there's other evidence that was revealed today. Can you go into that?
Yeah. So something that was really striking that happened today was that the police were able to outline to the public exactly how they pieced together this story that have led the state attorney's office to press charges. They were able to say that there's tons of camera footage across the city, from police cameras to bus cameras to taxi cab cameras, that are allowing them to understand that these two men were at the scene of the incident. They, through their phone records that the police were able to get, had been in communication with Jussie not only before the incident, but an hour after it. They spoke to him while they flew to Nigeria for 2 weeks while the police were investigating. Mm-hmm. So we were able to see the technological part of this, that the police relied deeply on phone records, surveillance records, and interviews with people that they kind of ran into while they were either buying rope at a local, like a store of some sort, to like the subway people, to this random news reporter from NBC who corroborated to the police in an interview that he did not hear any racial or homophobic language when he was parking his car next to the scene, which, you know, is curious that a reporter was next to all this and didn't notice anything. So we were able to see all the backdrop of all this. And all of this they have proof of. And that's the big thing here, is that they have a lot of proof and they've submitted it to prosecutors and they're going to go forward with the case.
Just to put my investigator hat on, because I like to pretend.
When that
NBC reporter was something really interesting to me, and we talked about this, me and Ryan, how just surprising it was a new part of the evidence that we hadn't heard before. If she is a reporter, why didn't she speak out unless, I guess, the police had told her to be quiet?
Yeah, I mean, I was really interested in that, too. I was literally on MSNBC when we all found out it was an NBC reporter, and I was like, wait, girl, like, hold up.
That's what you wait your whole career for, here's the thing, have that tip.
That Charlie guy, Charlie DeMar, who's been killing it with all the reporting out of Chicago, honey, that could have been her. I don't know. She missed her moment.
Right? Like, that really could have. Like, so I was like, who is this person? But I would assume, police did find this person pretty quickly. And because they're a witness, they're going to be given different rules by the police. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. The police won't speak. They're trying to get them to explain more about everything all day. And they're like, what we said is what we said, and we're not speaking anymore.
So that was Zach Stafford, the editor-in-chief of The Advocate, who is just telling us more about the case. He's in touch with Jussie's team, it seems like, every day. And they did release a new statement about basically the whole news and press conference that happened earlier, and just in response to the Chicago PD and everything that's coming out. They said this: today we witnessed an organized law enforcement spectacle that has no place in the American legal system. The presumption of innocence, a bedrock in the search for justice, was trampled upon at the expense of Mr. Smollett, and notably on the eve of a mayoral election. Mr. Smollett is a young man of impeccable character and integrity who fiercely and solemnly maintains his innocence and feels betrayed by a system that apparently wants to skip due process and proceed directly to sentencing. That is the statement from Jussie Smollett's team, still maintaining his innocence while all this evidence is coming out. Yeah. We have Scott Musgrove joining us after the break, who's a licensed psychologist and also the host of a criminal podcast. So we want to dive into the psychology around this. And if he did do it, what would have been the motive behind it all? Welcome back. Well, let's go there with Sheer and Ryan on the new Channel Q on the radio and radio.com. We're on Alexa, so if you have one, just say, hey, Alexa, I want to listen to We Are Channel Q. Is that how you do it, Ryan?
Oh, yeah. Well, my version is like, girl, Alexa, what you doing?
And then what?
Nothing happens because I said
no,
it wrong.
No, and then what do you say? You say, go to We Are Channel Q?
Yeah, I say, go to We Are Channel Q on the radio.com app.
Okay, there you go.
That's why they don't pay me to do ads, because I'm not that good
that
at
was,
it.
That was an impromptu ad right here. We are continuing with our discussion all around the Jussie Smollett investigation. And now we're going to be getting another take from a doctor, Scott Musgrove, who's a psychologist and host of the true crime podcast, LA Not So Confidential. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me back.
Yes. So, of course, when you were on, it seemed like, you know, still, and he's still innocent. He hasn't been proven fully, and he hasn't admitted to being guilty. But
right. It's just continuing to unfold.
Yes. And we were talking around it. But let's just say he ends up being guilty. And as a psychologist, what would have been, and we talked about a bit about the motive with fame and social media, a lot that's coming out is that he was perhaps dissatisfied with his salary, or that he wasn't happy with how Fox responded to these threatening and homophobic and racist letters he got. So what do you think could have happened to lead to something of this extreme?
Right. Okay, so I hear what you're saying. I'm just going to change one factor. We're going to back it up and rather say that rather than him being proved guilty, what we're going to say is that let's look at a similar situation. Let's just say that an unnamed person is going through the same thing. Mm-hmm. Immediately, what I'm going to be looking at is I have no idea about the long-term background of this individual. I don't know if there's a history of trauma, if there's been behavioral issues for years that, you know, we haven't been privy to. But what we do know is that these two incidents back to back like this within days of each other, you know, they really exhibit what we call impulsivity. So if the motivating factor is as what is being presented in the media right now as a desire for more money, is that greed? Is this someone who, or is this someone who feels like he's been slighted by his production team, that he is not being treated financially in the same way as his co-stars? Now, we all know that people, depending on your agent, your level of experience in the business, you know, they are your financial team. They make you deals. And sometimes what one actor in a supporting role makes is completely different from what another one makes. So maybe that's what the motivator is. But what I'm really concerned about is this impulsivity and really the lack of planning. Like, this is like not looking and considering what the long-term enormous consequences are, right? This is big. This is career-ending if it ends up ending in charges and criminality, right?
Yeah, and also it's a bad look for the LGBTQ plus community, and I would say the African-American community.
Absolutely.
No, first
don't
of
you
all,
think so?
No, do not put that on the African-American community.
But both, isn't that bad look
here's,
for both? Because he had the,
here's
it's
what
like,
I want to say
he
to
used
that.
Race and homophobia.
And here's what I want to say to that. There are plenty of white men that go around shooting up places, and all the time you don't blame the whole entire white race for shooting up places.
Well, so white
I think
men,
we
yeah.
have
and
to,
that,
and I think we have
point.
To put, like, okay. we have to stop putting accountability on the entire communities of people for that. I think that's just not, because I've been seeing that recurring argument, and that's been something that I'm just like, how, especially, and I know you talk about mental health, how do you, you know, be compassionate with someone with mental health issues, but also still hold them accountable for their actions?
That's an absolutely perfect point, is that you have to start from a place of compassion, because this is not a monster. He did, if this person engaged in this behaviors, then he has done something incredibly wrong that hurts a number of people, not just himself. It hurts all the people around him, and it impacts the community at large. However, he didn't get here, or he or she, whoever does this kind of behavior, they don't just one day decide, oh, I'm going to plan a fake attack on myself. Something happened along the way to get them to this point. And that's where you have to really work at being compassionate. And that's what we're trained as mental health clinicians. We want to look at the big picture, you know, so that we can be there, we can be present, and we can be authentic and help people get past it. And in an instance like this, I would be really concerned at, you know, man, what happened that got you to the point where you thought this was a legitimate plan of action instead of being this very impulsive, almost childlike assertion of, you know, I want what I want and I want it right now.
Mm.
And you're not moving fast enough for me. Like, you know,
yeah,
that's my, would be my big concern.
Really,
but yeah, it's important for us to have And like you were saying, Ryan, one of the big things, like, let's just not jump on the bandwagon. Is even though I know the picture has even changed since this morning, we still all need to step back and look at it, you know, rather than everybody jumping in and taking sides and making blanket general statements. Because right. this person doesn't necessarily, he doesn't represent me as a gay man. He doesn't represent a person of color who's gay. He represents himself. And that's what is really unfair to marginalized communities, is that suddenly people start throwing up these assertions of that he is a representation of the community, where no, he's a representation of himself, and he may have gotten there as a result of being marginalized, but you know, that's for a longer conversation on another day.
We always go there, but yeah, the week is young. You know, we still have tomorrow's show, so we can do it.
I have you back.
Scott Musgrove again, a licensed psychologist and also host of the true crime podcast, LA Not So Confidential, is with us. So let's do the flip side of this. What would have been the, I guess, intention or motive of the Chicago PD in doing this if this is a hoax? Or, you know, anyone involved? I don't, like, I'm thinking, of course, I'm pointing the finger to the Chicago PD before anyone else, because that's what I think if I'm going to look at the other side.
Well, so say it again. You're concerned that there, what about the actions
that
of the
Chicago PD might have, I don't know, planted this, or now that, you know, the statement from his team said it's the eve of the mayoral election. It seems like there's some sort of political motive here. Could that have been intertwined in this?
Look, anything is possible, but once again, this is where we have to challenge ourselves to go, wait, let's step back. And I mean, I look at it, you know, I listened to what the chief of police was saying, and honestly, I look at it and I go, you know, if he really wanted to go there, he could have gone a lot further.
Oh.
I felt like there was actually some restraint in what he said. Even though he was saying that this is, you know, this is a terrible incident and it reflects poorly on everybody, but you know, we just have to be careful. Like, it is weird that there's a, like you said, that synchronicity of mayoral campaign and all these things going on at once. But I don't want to put together disparate facts that may not be connected to each other.
Yeah.
Because I go back to the idea of, like, the letter being sent. Oh, you know what? I'm going to step away. I'm not going to go into conjecture because
I was kind of intrigued. Maybe we should continue after the break.
Well,
I know. All right. So wait, why don't we take a moment, a little break? Dr. Chris Donahue from Loveline will be joining us, and you could lead into some other theories you might have around this. So keep listening to Let's Go There with Chiara and Ryan on the new Channel Q. Okay, we are continuing our conversation with licensed psychologist and host of the True Crime Podcast, LA Not So Confidential. Welcome back, Dr. Scott Musgrove.
Thank you so much.
So before the break, you were teasing some thoughts you had around the letter, which was a letter that was sent to the studio where Empire shoots. And it was given to Jesse, and it had, you know, homophobic and racial slurs on it. And then it had this powder, which was then, it was revealed that it was Tylenol. So what were you about to say about this letter?
So, well, what I was going to conjecture, without going too far into, you know, conjecture, is that, look, you know, when people are stressed out, when people are angry, all of us, we react in certain ways. Mm. Some people handle stress better. Some people become more impulsive and less rational thinking. So what doesn't really, or what is in, what I get interested in here is these two events being so close together involving one person that, you know, let's just say someone orchestrated this. Let's say that an individual decides to orchestrate this for a need to compensate himself financially, for bargaining power. It's not really well thought out.
Yeah.
Like, it's just really not well planned. It's sophomoric. It's almost childlike. Because anyone in the industry, and I'm talking of someone who I was 20 years in the entertainment industry, in casting, production, and management before psychology. And anyone knows that, like, asserting that you're a victim of a hate crime is not going to be like an extra check written for you.
Right.
It just doesn't. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
You know, it's never going to work that way. So someone being in the place where they're thinking that that's a viable manner of getting their needs met is really not thinking rationally.
Yeah. I think it's more after the letter, he felt like they didn't take it seriously enough. So maybe that was the motivation to set up this thing saying, okay, now if they see I'm beaten up and it happens in real life, they need to take these things seriously.
So you're saying, so let me just make clear, then you're saying that it would be possible that the letter was not something he did. Well, but the staged attacks might be. I mean, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that.
According to this, in the court, they released this whole statement.
Yeah, it's that, a bond
the
proffer.
The bond proffer. And in it, they said that he had received a letter. They didn't say in that he had done it himself.
Yeah.
They just said, according to the two brothers that were part of this whole thing, they were told by Jesse he had received this letter. He felt like Fox wasn't taking it seriously, and he wanted to do something about it.
Okay, well, see, once again, that's clarification that because you guys have been grinding on this all day,
oh,
you're
yes.
on top of all this. Like, that's, you know,
you
seriously,
call
like,
it that.
That was my limited, you know, that's another example of, like, we all need to step back and gather all the information before anybody snaps to a judgment, you know, or a rash action. But, yeah, that's true. Maybe the first was a legitimate action, and in his anger for not feeling like he was being heard or respected, he felt that he had, you know, an individual would feel like they need to up the ante, right?
Yeah. And so let's fast forward and say, okay, this all comes out, unfortunately, like as we've prefaced, we don't know if this is necessarily true. He is still, you know, Jesse is still fighting for his innocence, of course. But let's fast forward and say, of course, this is all comes out to be a lie. And he goes and checks in. He claims that obviously there's mental health issues. How does the community around him or the people that have been very affected by this, how do they move forward in forgiveness?
Boy, that's a great point. What I would say is that if someone can recover from this, the way you recover from it is that you take responsibility for the part that you're responsible for, and you try and move forward, and you take the pelts that come with it. You take the blows that are going to come from the people that really believed in you and supported you the first time. And, you know, it's going to be a hard journey for someone in this position. But they have got to be the one that holds the banner of, like, I take responsibility for my actions and let's move forward. I mean, there's a great line in Wicked. I mean, I'm going to give
reference.
A musical theater.
I love a Wicked reference.
But even, you know, the wizard says, look, Elphaba, the most celebrated are the rehabilitated, right?
Wow. Honestly, I was hoping we wouldn't lose the gay in this interview, and you totally bought it back for me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you know, they'll take away my gay card if I don't.
No, for sure.
Well, Scott Musgrove, thank you so much again for being here to break that down. He's a psychologist and host of the True Crime Podcast. Check it out, LA Not So Confidential.
Thank you, guys. Anytime.
And of course, on social media, also a lot of what people are saying, Ryan, are that, you know, if he's lying, but look at Trump, he lies all the time. There's always those apples to oranges, those comparisons. It becomes like a point system of who's lying more.
Yeah, which is so annoying because I think everyone is forgetting about this whole big picture. And I think we're also going to dive into this weird discussion also kind of about racism is there actually a such thing as kind of being racist into white people in general or MAGA support? Like, what is discrimination? And I think there's this weird conversation happening on the internet about that. And it's one that I feel like we need to be talking about in spaces of not saying, hey, I told you so, and not saying, yeah, he was he did this because he was racist against white people and all these other things. But I think there's a bigger conversation here in what that actually looks like. I'm not really sure because everyone is very hurt and there's just anger everywhere.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm interested to see where these conversations go.
Definitely. Well, we got our Yaz Queen of the Day coming up after this. It will warm your heart. It's something different, a nice change of pace from today's, you know, really interesting but complicated show. A trans kids book you'll want to hear about coming up after this. We are back. You're listening to Let's Go There with Sharon Ryan on the new Channel Q on the radio and radio.com. Happy Thursday again. It's been a crazy week. I think we all feel it from everything happening in the news to, of course, the supermoon. Blame it on the supermoon. And I just think that...
Actually, I'll let you blame that on the Supermoon. Actually, has it been the Supermoon All Black History Month? Because people have just been showing out. I just don't know what to do, honey.
So, yeah, I think that there's feelings are at a high. I think that, and across the board, and I'll just say this, you know, as a person here, my friends, I feel like... a regular person, not as a host of a radio show, but from human to human, I feel like everyone around me is going through a lot. I'll be honest. And it could be a reflection of what's happening in our society, in the news, at the top. But people are feeling very drained with their life. And we all need some motivation. And so I'm here to give you some love today. If you're listening, just know you're awesome. You might be going through some stuff. There might be some negativity around you. But we're going to all get through it. And now we've got our Yas Queen of the Day, which is very inspiring, to say the least.
Which I love, because, you know, this show has been heavy, and I love it when we get to end it on some positivity.
Yes. So there's this trans kids book, Julian is a Mermaid, and it's winning hearts and awards. This is definitely one to check out, whether you're a parent, or you might want to get this as a gift, or just to, you know, check out, because it's a really amazing example of inclusivity and diversity within a children's book. So when Jessica Love wrote and illustrated her first book about a gender questioning child who finds acceptance from his grandmother, she really didn't think it would one day be nominated for a prize. The book is called Julian is a Mermaid, and it follows a child as he sees women dressed as mermaids in New York, and then copies their look at home. So then his grandmother sees him putting on lipstick, a skirt, a headdress, and all that. And then she adds to the outfit. She gives him a pearl necklace and takes him to Coney Island Mermaid Parade. And the author, who lives in Brooklyn, basically created the barrier-breaking children's book over the course of 5 years after realizing there was a limited number of books about genderqueer kids, which I love this story. And it just shows when, for kids, I mean, back in the day, even 5 years ago or even a year ago, and now what we're going through, a lot of kids are in families where that's not accepted and they're doing this secretly and privately. And to have a book that shows a family member supporting that and encouraging them to be who they are is just a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
She told this to Pink News. I have a friend who is trans, but he didn't transition until much, much later in life. He was in his 50s when he finally was able to live like a man, and that was the result of some pushback when he was younger. Talking to him and thinking about his journey got me curious about what kind of literature there is out there for kids who might be asking themselves these questions. And I started reading blogs of families who had children who were questioning their gender. And that's when she created this. And mythical creatures have become a symbolic image to transgender people and their allies. They're depicted with nothing below their waist but a tail, right? Mm-hmm. Even though the Disney film, The Little Mermaid, she transforms into, you know, a woman, it can be anything.
Oh, and I love that. That makes I guess that movie so more inclusive.
Yeah, it makes me look at Little Mermaid in a different way.
Because honestly, she was a mermaid, and I feel like everything magical is gay, and so that's beautiful.
Mermaids and unicorns. So check it out. Julian is a Mermaid. That's our Yas Queen of the Day.
Yas Queen.
And coming up tomorrow on the show, of course, we'll bring you some more updates and the latest news and details around the Jussie Smollett investigation. And we're diving into some other news. And this was a big debate this week. Was the MAGA hat kid, you know, the one that was being bullied by the media and that was in that...
The Covington High School kid.
Big confrontation with the Native American elder. Well, he is suing the Post for $250 million. And you guessed it, we'll be going there. That's tomorrow on Let's Go There from 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, right here on Channel Q. We are sending you love and lights.
And remember to slay.
See you tomorrow.